Moncrief on News Talk
with Gas Networks Ireland. Natural gas is compatible with a wide range of modern appliances. gasnetworks.ie/movetogas.
It's time for our farming slot. Mairead Lavery, from the Farmers Journal, joins us once again. Mairead, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon.
Mairead is sporting an injury today. She's come in under great duress. The arm is in a sling.
Doing too much work at home. Pull the muscle.
Yeah.
So, kind of painful though.
Yeah. I'd imagine so. Yeah.
And I have the arm in a sling, not so much because I need the sling, but I need to stop myself reaching with the hand and actually doing more damage.
Yeah.
So it's really kind of.
Which is very difficult to do. Well, it's your left. Are you right handed?
Yeah, I'm right handed, but it's imprisoning my hand, with the sling. So I don't reach because if I do, it's like. Lift off now, to be honest.
Oh, God. Right. I suppose that the best farming story of the week is the story about sales. Astronomical figures we're dealing with now.
Yeah, well, they're good. They're up. That's the main thing. And the export market, with the whole worries about Brexit and the whole concern of the ag community, not just farmers, but for everybody who works in the processing end of it, that we'll get the markets in other countries to make up for what's happening might happen in the UK, depending on what way the Brexit deal works. So the whole thing, food are up to new highs. I think when I started coming in here first, we were exporting maybe 7 billion euros worth of food and drink, but we're now talking about 12.6 billion euros worth. And this isn't, where you're putting a drop of dye in water and making a fizzy drink. This is actually, there's a lot going on here and a lot of money being left behind right across the sectors. The star performer would have to be dairy. It's up 19%, 4.02 billion euro. And butter accounts for the largest amount of it. The sales of butter, would you believe this, are up 60%, Irish butter.
Huh.
That's nearly doubled. Like a 60% increase in any product in these days, especially a product like butter. But it's all back to the fact that butter is now, the black marks have gone off it.
Yes.
It's come full circle. It's now kind of top of the foodies and the chefy lists, and it's selling like mad. And, you're talking about, big interest in European markets in particular for butter. And also there's good export markets as well. China, we exported 65 million and it accounts for over nearly 40% of the non-EU dairy trade. So, China, more and more important all the time for the market. Beef's up 5%, 2.5 billion. But the situation here is that we're still exporting about 51% of it to the UK. And that is a concern. And we hope that Brexit will come right.
Are there signs that we're, if you like, lessening our dependence on Britain?
Yes, there is, because we are increasing to other markets. EU countries accounted for 43%. And there's an awful lot of 43% sales. And there's an awful lot of activity going into the non-EU markets, the outside markets right across the world. And hopefully now that'll bear fruit. Like we've only got access to a lot of those markets in the last year. And, it takes time. This idea that trade deals are, you just kind of go into a room, there's an agenda and you agree it and you all come out at the end of the evening.
Mm.
They take forever. And so that's what the government is working on. Whatever about, though, our dependence in beef, for beef. Now, beef is big, 2.5 billion. We exported 295 million worth of chicken, up 3%. But 80% of that goes to the UK. And likewise, down in the whole vegetable sector, that was flatlined. It was 230 million exports, but nearly 91 million of that are mushrooms. And again, they faced a lot of difficulty on the UK market. But the situation is, it's good that we have those level of exports. I mean, there's an awful lot of jobs in production and in processing right across the country. There's people required, particularly in the dairy sector, because, dairying has grown dramatically in the past 2 years, 3 years. And, the markets are there and the price of butter has actually really buoyed up prices for the last 12 months. So the shortage of labour now is the big problem on dairy farms. And the Farm Relief Service are running training courses for people who maybe, not very busy as farmers. They may be kind of have cut back a bit, but they wouldn't mind going out and doing a morning milking a couple of mornings a week. Women maybe who are, you know, would like to change, well, not necessarily change careers, but, you know, again, where a couple of mornings doing the milking or evenings doing the milking might suit them. Or else people who are on unemployment benefit. It's a training course they can go on as well. So a lot of it, a couple of days in a classroom environment, about what, 20 days or something on a farm environment. Mm. So again, if you want to learn a new skill, working in one of these high tech milking parlours, and you know, something to get you up in the morning and out and get into the fresh air, there you go. There's opportunities there for people.
That's a good news story, though. I suppose there's still that 2 or 3 years where. You see, also at the same token, though, Britain is importing so much Irish produce.
I know.
If Brexit happened in the morning, where else would they go for it? Assuming they're leaving some sort of standards in place and they won't just kind of import any
Crap.
Yeah,
but it's the tariffs that will fall. If the deal hasn't been made in terms of a trade deal, well, then the tariffs that apply to world market conditions automatically apply. You have to live within the agreements, so you can't just kind of send the stuff over as if we were still in the UK in the EU rather. These tariffs would apply, and that's why getting the deal is going to be really important for us, but also important for them to be able to get the product in. And to the standard that they're used to.
Yeah.
You know, like, you don't need chlorinated chicken. You know, you don't need a lot of stuff where there's no traceability. And, you know, you can trace the ancestors or the relations of most cattle in this country now back kind of 3-4 generations. Mm. I can tell you can't do it for humans. Yeah. You know?
Well, some humans wouldn't want you to be able to do that, to be honest with you. So what do cowboy boots, handbags and luxury cars have in common with farmers?
Well, you wouldn't believe that, would you? It's not that the dairy farmers, although there are some dairy farmers, and I'm sure they bought their wives luxury handbags and they're driving around in nice 4x4s. But farmers, they mightn't follow fashion trends, but when it comes to the catwalk or the car showroom, especially for the luxury cars, you know, they're very much linked by one thing, and that's skins and hides.
Right, of course.
Yes, yeah. So you've got leather handbags and you've got beautiful leather seating on the luxury cars. But what's actually happened in the past 12 months is that the prices of hides, the raw leather, they're back by about a third on the past year. They're down about 20 euro on their 2017 peak. And so why is that happening? Well, a lot of the reasons is because they're producing more cattle out in North and South America. So there's more cattle. There's bigger numbers in the market. So the bigger supply, price has gone down. There's also been in Italy, where the big concentration of leather producers or manufacturers or people who kind of do add value to leather, and you know all the Italian shoes,
of course,
and handbags,
yeah,
and the rest of it. Where they get their supplies from in Europe, there's been a bit of a drought, and that meant that the skins weren't as good or the hides weren't as good. So, you know, there wasn't a market for them, and that's an issue as well. And then we all know that the price of oil now, even though it's not as low as it was at its lowest, the price of oil has dropped very significantly on, say, 2014 figures. And when you've got a low price of oil, it means it's cheaper to produce the synthetic fibres that that are used often instead of leather. So you've got now, you've got stuff like this faux leather that I think that's the right way you pronounce it, faux leather. It's oil based. And when the prices of oil are low, this can be replaced, especially in motor cars.
Well, that's interesting now, actually, that you know, people often don't buy leather because it comes from an animal, but then they replace it with something that is maybe potentially damaging the environment.
Well, again, back to the coffee mugs on, you know.
Yeah.
So it's also relevant for casual shoes. There's more and more, if you notice, kind of canvassy type shoes out there for casual wear. And the leather shoe is being just literally demoted to being for formal wear, you know, in the office or if you get married or whatever. Shoe leather was a really big market also. So basically then what's happening is that, according to The Guardian, the cowboy boots are getting back in fashion. And they take up a significant amount of leather.
They do.
So we really need that to become a real fashion trend.
leather cowboy boots. I'm old enough to remember when they were a fashion trend.
So that's the link now. You know, the cheaper oil prices means you're producing this faux leather. You've got a drought in Italy, and you know the quality of the hides aren't good enough. But it's all kind of backing into the price of hides, which is a significant part of the price of the animal.
Right. OK, another intriguing question. Why has Saudi Arabia's decision to allow women to drive hit its buffalo market?
Yeah, this came up at a Board B, a meat marketing seminar last year. Well, just at the end of the year there. And, you know, last year, the Saudi Arabian government lifted the ban on women driving.
Mm.
So, I mean, loads of women knew how to drive, but they couldn't go out unless they were accompanied by a male. So most Saudi women had drivers because, you know, their sons or their husbands or their whoever couldn't be kind of with them. And so they had drivers. So now they're allowed drive. So the problem is that most of their drivers were probably from Pakistan or places like that. And where, you know, and they would have been migrant workers on very low wages. And the meat they were eating was buffalo meat. And also, by the way, cheap chicken. And they're all losing their jobs and being sent home. So the market basically for buffalo milk has collapsed. That is the law of unintended consequences.
That's extraordinary.
So the market has collapsed because the people, the guys, all the guys who were driving these ladies around have lost their jobs because now women can drive for themselves.
Oh, OK. That's interesting, isn't it, the way those things knock
so
on.
So it's completely, you know, a completely law of unintended consequences.
Yeah.
Now, I'd imagine they could find other jobs maybe. But, you know, I think that the migrant rules are quite strict inside in Saudi Arabia.
Yeah.
And if you're not
Along with pretty much everything else there.
If you're not working, I mean, you're not eating, basically.
Yeah.
So anyway, but it's a Board B seminar. So, I mean, I didn't pick it up on tabloids.
No,
it was there.
No, that's so interesting. Right. OK. So this week, some more, and as happens this time every year, there's some more state papers have been released, and there's some interesting agricultural-related ones. In at least in the sense that the UVF was threatening.
The UVF, yeah, it's in the same letter where they these are the state papers released in 1987 for 1987, and it was the ones where they had the plot, you know, to assassinate Charlie Haughey. But it also had a threat to derail the Irish economy by infecting livestock with a bunch of really nasty viruses, or I don't know—is that what you call them? Diseases? They're not really diseases. They're, you know, they're horrid stuff, like foot and mouth disease, like anthrax, fowl pest, swine fever. Now the threat was made by the UVF, and the objective was to destroy the Irish agri economy. But the second objective was to force the Irish government to really strengthen border security or security along the border to stop people coming through and to stop, you know, any sort of trading in livestock. So, you know, and it's not like 1987 isn't a long time ago.
No, it's not.
No, and I don't know whether they'd been able to get their hands on what they were threatening. But, you know, there's, you know, one fella knows somebody whose cousin is somebody, and, you know, before you know it, you've got a trail. But anyway, that was one of the things that has emerged from the state papers.
And was there any indication that the government was taking this very seriously, this threat? But I imagine there's a lot of threats floating around
at the
time. I
imagine there was,
you know?
But I mean, who was this one said, you know, you've to get lucky every time, we've only to get lucky once.
Yeah, indeed.
And, you know, we saw with BSE in particular, you know, which peaked in around, you know, the 1990s, the mid-1990s, you know, the impact that had on the Irish markets. We're only literally coming back into those markets now, negotiating trade deals with them now. So, you know, the implications in terms of, you know, long-term, you have to have great trust in what you're producing and what you're selling forward. And people have to have that trust in you. And, you know, it's why I always say about farming and processing, you know, the weakest, we're only as strong as the absolute weakest link in the chain. And, you know, you're talking about several hundred thousand people, and I'm well over several hundred, maybe 400,000 people, you know, right across the board working in the sector. And you just need, you know, a couple of bad apples. So, I mean, it's that internal threat, but it's also the external threat that you have to keep an eye on as well.
Right. Finally, smoke bombs.
Smoke bombs, yeah, that's another little one. We have this lovely section in the paper, in the Farmers Journal, every week. Know-how, you know how to coppice a hedge, or, you know, you know, build a bird box or anything. But the one is know how to test the ventilation in your sheds with smoke bombs. Livestock, you know, when they go into off the land and into a shed, you have to be very careful now, particularly say with baby calves, which will start coming now at the end of the month, that there's no drafts. So if you've got, if you let off one of these little smoke bombs, now they're only the size of kind of, you know, like I'll tell you what they're like is, you know, the little candles, you know, the little things that you put in.
Tea lights.
Tea lights. Yeah. They're like a tea light. And so if in the case of a calf house, you know, you let off the smoke bomb and the smoke runs along the bottom of the room or the bottom of the floor and out, well, then means you're dealing with drafts and the calves lying down are lying in a draft. And it's the real simple way of finding it out. What is the ventilation like in a shed? Because if the shed is not being ventilated properly, you've got a lot of heat and a lot of moisture, and those two together means a hell of a lot of bacteria. So you need to be getting the moisture and the heat out of the shed, and you need to be turning over the air in the shed about every 10 times an hour is what they recommend. And so ideally, when you let off a test, a little bomb like this, the smoke should go, or the smoke should go straight up and out through whatever vents you have in the shed. If it kind of congregates in one corner, that's not good. Mm. You know, if it runs along the bottom of the floor, you're looking at drafts and all damp and all, well, drafts mainly. And so, you know, it's a very simple little way to test your insulation. And then, you know, with a good builder, you can do a bit of maybe take out a, you know, if it's galvanised, you can maybe, you know, space a couple of sheets of galvanised so that you've got an exit point for all this more or less hot air.
Yes.
So it's a really good piece now on exactly what to expect. The only thing they say is William Conlon, who writes all of this for us, William says, you know, don't do it in a shed where you've got, you know, skitty animals, particularly say a bunch of bulls or something like that, because you just might upset them. So make sure it's done in a shed where there's nice docile animals. And,
or in your house.
Yeah. Well, if you want, you can find where you draft your house. But you do kind of need the animals in there because, you know, if the animals aren't there, you're not getting this concentration of heat and moisture.
Mm.
You know, you've got an empty shed and there's nothing happening. So it's when you've got the livestock on board in the shed, you really can get an idea of what the ventilation is like. And you know the way you turn on the air conditioning in your own, you know, office or wherever, it kind of clears the air. So it's to make sure that you're getting good air into the shed.
How clever. Marie, thanks a million for coming into us. Marie Lavery there from the Farmers Journal. We'll be back in a couple of minutes.
Moncrief on News Talk
with Gas Networks Ireland. Natural gas is compatible with a wide range of modern appliances. Gasnetworks.ie/movetogas.